My name's Holly, I'm an addict. So, I have thought about cancelling this chair so many times in the last week. But I just couldn't think of a particular female friend that I would want to put this responsibility onto and ask that kind of favour from. So, I've just turned up and I've just got to be brave. This really is not my personality type, sitting on a stage at the front of people with a microphone. It terrifies me. There's a particular thing I have at work where we have to sort of like be the head of this sort of meeting and stand up in the middle, and I just beg my colleagues every time to do that particular thing. So big up me for the courage right now, you know. This is really not my style. I go to very small, quite quiet meetings that are generally candlelit, and we sit in a circle and it's all quite soft. So, something much bigger than me, you know, this is the thing that, you know, the reason I do show up and, you know, do this, because I could just easily just say, oh, no thanks, I'm busy. You know, I do have a message, and it's a powerful message, because everybody has a message, and everyone's message is powerful. And it might not be similar to your story, but it's similar to someone's. And if someone hears it and it reaches someone and it helps someone just stay clean another day, then I'm going to turn up and just be brave and just do what I've done in NA and just come and tell my story, you know? And thank you all for doing the same, by the way. I do a thing when meetings start at the moment, and it really sort of grounds me in what NA is and what this is really about, because I could so easily turn up to meetings and just be caught up, you know, like the bridge to normal living. I'm in normal living, you know, sometimes not reacting like a normal person, but I'm in normal living. And I can turn up to meetings and just want to tell you all about how hard normal living is. And I sort of forget what it is that we're actually doing here. You know, I can forget quite readily and quite easily the absolute magic of what is happening here right now. And so when we're going around doing the readings and there's a moment silence, remember the self-suffering addicts, I think of like a mile radius to where I'm sat in that meeting. And I think, you know, and I could cry when I think of it. I think of all the people that are sat either on the streets, you know, or even with their friends in a pub or in the office ordering a gram or looking up the local chemist, whatever it is, where they're in the middle of something where they have said, I am never going to use again, but they can't stop. Because we're sat here and we're clean. You know, it just really sort of grounds me. And another thing recently that's really struck me, which is a, you know, something I just miss so readily, we sort of all just sit here and we hear these really, you know, like the last speaker, like, what a life! Everyone's life. We hear each other's sort of stories and sort of, you know, just what a beautiful thing. On a Friday night, I can come to a room where someone's going to tell me, who they've never met before, that kind of detail about their life. Like, it cracks my heart wide open. But it struck me in meetings recently where I sat, you know, people I know in my home group, people I've known for years, and I just sat there and I thought, how many of us are supposed to be dead? How many of us would have lost our kids? How many of us would be in a mental institution? And you know, I can pretty much guess who was who in my home group. I'm sure they'd agree. And, you know, fucking hell, we're alive and we're semi-sane most of the time. You know, we're doing our best to hold it together when we've lived bloody scary lives and we've lived some darkness. And so I have to just remember that before I sit here and I tell you how scared I am and just sort of mumble off with, you know, something really kind of self-absorbed about needing help to just get through the next moment. I'll come to that in a minute. But, yeah, so... oh, God. Yeah, there's going to be moments in this chair where I just have no idea what I'm going to say next. I'm just sort of going to sit here and just give myself permission to just be quiet and just, you know, be nervous and just struggle. And all those things that NA's taught me is all right, to just take my time. And yeah, so I have been clean. Fucking hell, I have been clean. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. We're in trouble. I've been clean for 14 years. So yeah, it is wow. And it's wow for all of us with all of our clean time. But wow, I've been clean for 14 years. I got clean at 21 years old. And I had no idea how young I was when I came into recovery, because I just felt like I'd lived a life. Felt like I'd been alive a long time, surviving, you know. But I was young, and I see that now in hindsight. And you know, basically grown up in NA, as we all do, whatever age we come in. So my story, you know, just the way that I view my story has just changed so much over the years, primarily through working the steps, bit of outside help as well, but My perspective and understanding of myself, my family, my life, society has just changed so much over time, and it will keep changing because I'm going to keep working the steps. I sort of realise I'm sort of re-surrendered in a new way, but we'll come to that. So I grew up in a family where both my parents were addicted, and you know, I just remember being very small and very confused. I had no idea what the hell was going on. I definitely didn't feel safe. I'm not sure I knew what safe was until I found NA. The feeling and experience of being safe, I just stood there feeling so confused and so sure that something was wrong with me, that I was sort of ugly and awkward and clumsy and, you know, couldn't say things right, and whatever I did, it kind of got this quite scary response. Like, you know, I just sat inside of myself feeling wrong. And, you know, I worked really hard for a number of years to just be a very good girl, be a really, really good girl, and just get things really, really right. And I sort of got the kind of little glimmers of attention that I was craving by being the really, really good girl for a bit. You know, it was sort of more a dismissive sort of, oh, Holly's fine, she's all right, we've got her covered, but my name got mentioned, you know. And I just felt such incredible pressure inside of myself, and this kind of concentration. I just couldn't focus on anything. I was in such internal struggle that I couldn't focus or concentrate on anything. You know, I couldn't really make close relationships. I was quite reactive from a young age. I couldn't concentrate on what was happening at school. I just couldn't sort of gel or bond to anything much at all. And, you know, it's sort of all just in a couple of years in that sort of like really fragile age of early teens, I just couldn't maintain this. I just couldn't hold it together. And I just started cracking, basically. And around 12, 13, got introduced to a little bit of hash. That, you know, really helped soothe things, but the cracks were pretty big and pretty dramatic. And part of the reason I got clean so young is because my addiction was just ferocious. And, you know, I was sort of thinking about certain little memories just as the meeting was started. Sort of just before I became a sort of daily dependent user on a variety of different substances. Oblivion was the mission, but just a little bit before, I decided I just wanted out. And at the age of 14, I tried to kill myself. And I fucking love myself there now. As a child, I just wanted to die. Okay? And I just fucking love myself then. I'm like, that breaks my heart. And I took an overdose and I sat in the hospital. I'm sort of got taken in an ambulance to the hospital. I refused to go to the hospital with all my friends. You know, it was a lovely moment of attention for me where everyone was panicking and I just sort of felt really important. You know, the lengths I felt I had to go to be noticed and to feel cared about, and how temporary that feeling was when I got it. You know, I couldn't hold on to it. Didn't have it inside of me, so it just didn't stick. I ended up in hospital, and my mum was very unwell at the time, and she couldn't tolerate it. I mirrored her. You know, I learned that overdoses get you attention from watching her struggle, okay? I was holding her hand just a few weeks before, and I saw how my granddad looked at her and was really concerned, you know. And I mirrored something for her, and she couldn't manage it. And I love her too there. Genuinely love her too there, okay? And she just blew up and marched out. And I remember distinctly, it was a really significant day because my friends, you know, all the kind of other lost kids that I'd managed to round myself by turned up at the hospital, and I pulled the drip out of my hand and I said, this is it, I'm with you. You guys are my family now. And off we marched. And just from that day, I just went on this mission to just hurt myself, to just use whatever I could get my bloody hands on, to use behaviours and actions, criminality, reactivity, whatever it is, to just get the fuck away from myself, because I just couldn't do it. And, you know, it was just chaos from the onset. It was just chaos. And every day was completely unpredictable and wild and violent, and very quickly just ended up in the criminal system. You know, painted all the local schools and community service and all the professionals. I'd just wake up in these cells and like the police would just be like, Holly, what's going on with you? Because I was just this sweet little kid, this sweet, traumatized little kid that people wanted to help, but I just couldn't. And another memory I had, I went into foster care, and I nearly cried about it earlier thinking about this. I went into foster care, lovely, lovely family in Twickenham. Went into this big, lovely house. I remembered opening the fridge, and the fridge was just full of food, and she just said, help yourself. And I just couldn't possibly take anything from this fridge that was meant to be my home. Just couldn't possibly, you know, imagine that I was allowed, like, that was my home and this food was actually for me. I just couldn't accept it. I couldn't accept their food, let alone their care, you know. And she used to give me a glass of orange juice, and I just felt so fucking awkward, stood there just like, who is this woman trying to care for me? Like this stranger trying to care for me. And I was just on the missing list from there. The police were always, I was a missing child constantly because I just didn't go back there because I just didn't, you know how to receive that or, you know, let that in at all. And I've made this decision that these, you know, group of people, and the group of people changed, but they were all lost kids, okay? They were all lost kids like us. I'm just assuming you're a bit like me. I've met a few addicts in my time in NA. And, just becoming so desensitized to violence. That's something that breaks my heart. So desensitized, like it's just a part of life. Like occasionally I'd rock up at my dad's house with a swollen cheek and a split lip, and he'd choke up and look at me in this panic, and I'd forgotten I had it. You know, I'm just wandering around, you know, off my head. And his look of despair and panic as he saw my face, I'd just be like, all right, Dad, chill out. You know, I just felt so desensitized to what was actually going on. And so I ended up in the prison system, was on remand for the first time when I was 17. You know, just like, there was no other option. They'd given me every other sort of source of help, you know, all professionals, you know, trying to extend these hands to me, and I just, you know. And I remember going in the sweatbox on the way to Holloway, and the certain lost kids I'd surround myself by, like, it was like this was just a given. This was where I was headed. This was what my life was destined to be. And it was a little bit exciting because I kind of sort of made it a bit. And that's really sad. You know, think about ambition and all of the things that I can be and am now. And that's, you know. And so I'm going to just sort of fast forward a bit. I went to my first meetings in prison. They weren't NA. There wasn't NA in the prison that I went to. I didn't feel like it was completely for me, this meeting, but it planted a seed for me that there was something. There was a, you know, group of people, though they seemed very different to me, and I judged them, and I, you know, felt an outsider. There was something there that planted a seed for me. And I'm just going to fast forward because the last couple of years of my using, I did quite a big sentence in the end, and the last couple of years of my using were just step one, living, breathing step one. I did not want to use, and I could not stop. I promised and I swore, and I was sick to death. I'm telling you, I did not want to use, and I could not stop. Nothing could stop me from using. And it's the darkest, most hopeless place to be existing, in desperate desire to be different, desperate desire to make up and be better and, you know, be the daughter and the sister that you really, really want to be and who you feel you are inside, but you just keep on crossing because you can't stop using. And I just lived a good few years of despair, just utter despair. And I think that's why when I came to NA, I came to NA. I think that's why when I found NA, I was not leaving. I think that's why when I came to NA, I did 4 meetings a day, most days. You know, like, that is the beauty, because that isn't just my story. I'm so glad it's my story, but it isn't just my story. How many people are wandering around desperate who need something, a place to anchor that's going to help them recover? And I've always held on to that gratitude. Like, how could I not? And so coming into NA, obviously I was this terrified, shame-filled, traumatized kid, you know, that had found a place where I could suddenly just start showing up regularly and start talking to you all honestly about what I was feeling and what was happening for me. And I was going to get a hug at the end of it. You know, and I've had a bit of a lifetime in NA, it feels it anyway. I'm sure I'm going to look at that and laugh, you know, in years to come. But it does feel like I've had a bit of a lifetime in NA. Like, initially, I couldn't tell you the whole truth because I was so scared because you were so important to me. And I desperately needed you to like me. And I had to just, you know, I did the best that I could. I didn't even know I wasn't telling the whole truth, you know. But I thought I had to be neat and I had to be perfect. So I had to be that good girl again, you know. I had to work the steps and work them hard and share about them and be really clear that I was on the program and I was, you know. And it's really hard to kind of connect to someone who's that neat and that perfect and that kind of on that mission. But that served me. You know, I wasn't really keen on getting too close to people and I didn't even know it, you know. And so loads of meetings, and I knew loads of people in NA, but I didn't really know anyone, and no one really knew me. And also, a major part of my story is that, you know, addiction crosses over into all sorts of things. It's about me not being able to stay with my feelings and connect to reality and just stay with life as it is, using all sorts of methods and things to try and sort of make that different and cope, imagining I can't cope without something that I'm leaning on. And about a year in, my eating disorder got really bad. I was bulimic at the time, and I just couldn't. I was white-knuckling, trying to just eat three meals a day. I was holding on fucking tight, trying to eat just three meals a day. And I, you know, just hit a wall with my bulimia, where I was just going to meetings regularly and feeling a bit of a fraud because I was struggling so much with an eating disorder. So much, and felt like I couldn't tell you because I was trying to be perfect. And I couldn't tell you that I was struggling in that kind of way. I just didn't think it was allowed that you would still love me and I would still be accepted and cared for. And, you know, I felt ashamed, you know, along with every addiction. You know, I felt ashamed. I had this secret. And, you know, I hit a really, really, really painful place with that, and had a couple of people. I remember one of my friends, so one particular friend who's kind of, you know, just really helped me with intimacy. She was the first person who said, "Holly, I want to be your friend. Can you just please be my friend?" And I was just like, what the fuck is that? What does she want from me? What does that mean? Like, how am I obliged? Just such a, oh, God. And she also said to me, "So how's your bulimia going?" And I remember going, "I haven't got bulimia, I have to stop her." I just slammed the door and just like marched off, and I had to seek outside help and you know, go into an eating disorder unit and do a day program, you know. And I've done a number of things, right? And I've sat in a number of sort of situations where I've sought outside help. Like, I was with a big group of girls, all on this mission to try and get well. And I had a little bit of experience about that, still going to NA. They didn't have NA. The backbone of everything that I have done and everything that I do is NA. And they didn't have NA. And I had this place, I remember we had this intense family session where everyone just ran, marched down, slammed doors. That's kind of my family in a like snapshot. And I was distraught. And I marched from Springfield Hospital to a meeting in Chelsea and just sat there and cried and felt held and loved and cared about and a bit ashamed. You know, it's always that and a bit ashamed. But they didn't have anywhere to go. They just, you know, we got somewhere to go. And, you know, I've been in recovery ever since. And my, you know, relationship with food is completely normal. I am free from that. And, you know, we work the steps of my sponsor alongside of being inside the unit, doing it in a verbal way, talking about the amends that I could make with my family, about the way it had impacted them. And, you know, the NA has just always been a, you know, stream along that. And I want to talk about my sponsor, okay? Taking that picture in mind, so I'm doing all these meetings. I remember my first ever share was in a women's meeting in Clapham. And, oh, it just makes me so sad now because I don't feel that now. I'm looking at all these beautiful people I've never met smiling at me. Thank you so much for that extension of warmth and love. Like, I feel it, I receive it, I send it back. Like, I'm here, I'm with you. And I remember my first chair, I sat there and I was sure that these women not just thought I was a bit of a dick, they hated me. You know, like the power of this, like I was so sure they just, you know, sort of despised me almost. Like they started sharing back to me and they were so soft and so kind and I just wasn't sure whether to believe them or not. And one of these women eventually became my spouse. I built up the courage. I used to go for coffee with them and would just sit there, just silently, kind of nervously shaking, you know, don't speak up because they just all seemed so cool and so like verbal. And I just couldn't join in. I just sit there like, oh my God, I'm such a little tag-along. They actually want me to come, you know. And this woman, she has just loved me back to life, you know. Loved me back to life, you know. I was just so stuck. I was frozen inside of myself, okay. Just going through the steps and speaking to this gentle, kind, funny woman regularly has loved me back to life. It was the most significant relationship of my life. And I didn't know it. I didn't know that's what it was going to be. I just thought, oh my God, this is another thing I have to do, and I better, you know, I just don't want to use. And I don't want to die. And, you know, I'd ring her and just feel so scared. And I remember just sort of like beginning to describe a sort of struggle in a day, and she would respond and say something like, that's so sad. I'd just be like, you know, just expecting this kind of harshness or this, and just this constant softness and compassion and kindness that she gave me. And again, where are you going to find that? Just freely. We're there for each other. Like, this is like the vulnerable person. The most vulnerable person is the most important person in this room. Just like for a minute, like, where are you going to find that? That's just, I love that and I treasure that and I try and practice that. You know, and sometimes the most vulnerable person might not be the person sitting there crying. They might be the new addict who's a bit lost and a bit defensive and a bit whatever. They're the ones that need the most love. And I watched something recently, Durham Prison. There was a documentary on it, right? Powerful moment. This guy is just found, wiped out on the floor, completely kind of, you know, the drugs are just flooding the prison system, basically, because there's ways to get it in, because they're new, you know. Anyway, this guy and the prison officers are all struggling. They're just completely, there's constant overdoses all the time, all the time, all the time. And this guy, what did he say? The prison officer said to him, well, why did you do that? And he said, oh, it was just like, just complete oblivion. And the prison officer said to him, and that's a good thing? And you saw just this moment in this guy's mind where he realized, it is for me, he said. It is for me. You know, just that moment where you realize, and like, and what I thought thinking that is now more than ever, NA needs to be a unified, strong, loving force, okay? Because there's big shit happening. Like, people need NA now more than ever, you know. And I'm now a mother. And, you know, I'm a mother. And I'm not someone who can do that kind of service right now. You know, I'm not someone, I've done years of that service, and it's not something I can do right now. And believe me, when I can, I will. I have maintained a relationship through ups and downs, you know, with that history, you know. I've maintained a relationship with somebody for a number of years, and we've started a family. And I've got two beautiful children, two beautiful, energetic, wild children, I have to add. Not just my take on things, I have friends who can confirm that. I go to meetings regularly so that I can feel held. Being someone who doesn't have a history of knowing what it is, I don't have a history of a loving, caring mother. And my mother doesn't have that history either, okay? I'm in the middle of something where I want to do something big and important and do it carefully and properly in a considered way, okay? I want to be a gentle, loving mum. Everything about loving and gentle I've learned here through my sponsor. Bit of outside help, but definitely here, okay? I regularly come to meetings because I'm functioning without this blueprint, like without the foundation to step into something that is the most important thing to me, okay? I want to do this well. And, you know, recently, so this particular sponsor that I had, she moved away, not very far, but when you've got two small kids, she's in Hackney, I'm over here, I just couldn't see her regularly, and we're both quite busy, and it was just the unavailable distance started happening, okay? And recently, you know, the last couple of years, I found one woman I wanted to be my sponsor. I was like, oh, she's really cool, she's got like 30 years clean. Can you be my sponsor? Sorry, I'm really busy. I was like, fine, okay, I'm going to keep just looking out. And I just couldn't find anyone. I just thought, I would never normally do this. This is so not my style. A couple of years later, I just said, I just wonder if things have changed. I really like you and I love what you have. And can you please be my sponsor? Like, I can hear a no. I won't ask you again. Promise I won't pester her. She said yes. And then I didn't call her for months. And we went for one coffee and I sort of sat there a bit awkwardly and didn't call her, you know. And I recently hit this thing where I realised I'm an addict in NA and all I've been doing is going to meetings and sharing. And I've gone a little bit crazy, okay, because I've suddenly thought that I can control situations that I can't control. My powerlessness now is about life, it's about my children, it's about my feelings, it's about my, you know, people's reactions, it's about the environment. Like, if I'm not working a regular program, I'm so dictated by my environment. Like, one little sign that the environment's off, I'll adjust and I'm ready to protect myself. Like, I forget, you know. And something really simple that I forget that, you know, it all just gets quite dark and quite scary, right? I need a loving higher power in my life. And when I remember that, and I take full responsibility for what is going on for me emotionally, not making you responsible for it or him responsible for it, or that responsibility, it's mine. This thing happened inside of me long before I met you, right? And it's just getting touched on by something you're doing. You didn't create that, okay? I can send people to court with that shit. And actually, it's mine, okay? And when I can do that, simply by working the steps, going to meetings regularly, sharing and connecting, I live in a different universe. I don't say that to be dramatic, thank you. It's literally a different universe, okay? So, like, something I really try and hold on to, which I regularly forget because I fall into fear and I have to keep remembering. There is nothing but love and a call for love. So, like, whatever that's happening over there, and it applies to me. You know, when I think of my step 8 and my step 9, like, I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to go out and treat people that way. I don't want to be that person, and it applies to me now. Mm-hmm. I don't want to react to my partner that way. I don't want to call him that thing. That's not who I am, right? It's a call for love. Always, when I bring it back, I was scared. Mm-hmm. I was scared, and I thought you were... That's generally the story behind it, right? So I am re-surrendered to these beautiful steps that I've just written a step 1, and I wrote it, like, I go into this place where I think, yes, I'm severely damaged, and I need some, you know, I need to find a serious professional who is really qualified and can handle my shit, right, that's going to hold me and hear what's going on for me. And I was writing this step 1, and I was like, oh, shit, this is painful. It's just, me trying to control the situation. You know, like, it's a step one issue. So much of it was just me in the middle of my life trying to make it different. It's not the fire alarm, is it? And, you know, that wonderful thing at the end of step one. So I was like, yes, my life's unmanageable. It was a humble step one. I haven't read it yet to my new sponsor. She's going to get to know me. That's an awkward thing. I've told the truth in that step one about, you know, how unmanageable my feelings can be and my reactions. And, you know, it's just all kind of just recommitting, resurrendering to what I know works, okay? And the end of step one, that beautiful thing that I never had before and I didn't know was possible. There's hope. There's hope. Mm-hmm. You know, there's hope that I can just be different. I can change. I can just be a little bit different. I can be a bit more loving than my own resources currently let me be. There's hope. So it's a lovely place to be, and I'll maybe be a bit insane in my step two, so bear with me for a few months, and I'll see you in step three, which is even better. Thank you.